Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. We're not taking live calls. However, we invite you to stay with us and enjoy the broadcast. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to the great big giant 4th of July, Independence Day special here on
already
here on Catholic Answers. I am Cy Killett, your host, and you knew we were going to do something big to celebrate the birth of the nation. Father, what? Yes,
I'm just gesticulating. That's all.
I am here with two wise men. We're going to discuss the Catholic Church and the American experiment for the next couple hours.
Oh wow.
These wise men are our chaplain, Father Hugh Barber, Norbertine priest, former prior of St. Michael's Abbey here in California, and recently returned from a European pilgrimage with all kinds of friends of Catholic Answers. Are accompanying him, Chris Check, our president here at Catholic Answers, the author, not the author of, the father of four fine young men.
He could have been a king, but we decided on a president. So.
Yes, right. We should have a king. We'll have to discuss that because that's what we're going to discuss, monarchy and democracy and all that. Hi, Chris Check.
I just saw two of my boys. They had a gig in Milwaukee, which happily coincided with some visits I was making in the Midwest.
What does that mean, they had a gig?
Their band.
Oh, really?
The Dead Century. CENTURY.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And but they don't have a drummer anymore.
Actually they do. His name is Drummer Rob. It's not Nick Chamberlain. But when they're out on the West Coast, Nick Chamberlain is the West Coast drummer for the Dead Century.
All right. Just before we went on the air, you said to me, I titled this program "The Catholic Church and the American Experiment." I thought 4th of July, Independence Day, a good time. It is the actual date is the 4th of July, so I can say that.
But we say Independence
really know
Day.
That. They actually decided it like on the 2nd, and so the 4th is the official date. But there are several others.
Okay. See, this is what this hour is going to be.
Well, it's even problematic because, you see, wherever in your European city, there's major boulevards named after dates on the calendar, which is usually. Some kind of a communist revolution or something like that. And so we want to say Independence Day and, you know, not.
But I'm just saying the date. It is the 4th of July when this is broadcast.
It is. But what we should be.
Independence Day.
Okay. All right. That's fine.
What we want to underscore is Independence Day.
Okay. So.
And we want all Catholic Answers Live listeners to start saying Independence Day.
Fair enough.
And stop saying 4th of July.
But you said right before we went on the air, Chris Check.
Yeah.
That you would take exception on the air with the phrase American experiment.
I do take exception.
What is your problem with
that? Well, it's a horrible neoconservative expression or liberal expression.
Really?
Which are very similar.
Neoliberal.
So here's the thing.
The neoliberal and neoconservative are the same, actually, if you're in Europe.
Sure.
So it's kind of Americans don't understand that.
Sure. So America was not an experiment. It wasn't an experiment. It was the settling of the New World by the English, four distinct types of English. We may have even discussed this.
Yeah,
the book that I would recommend to people here is by a very fine historian who taught at Brandeis. He may be retired. His name is David Hackett Fisher. And the book is called Albion Seed, and it describes the four different types of Englishmen who settled, Puritans in New England, the Anglicans in Virginia, and then in the Low Countries in the Carolina region. Four different distinct types of Englishmen settling different distinct regions. When we start talking about experiments, we make it sound as if all of this was motivated by a political or ideological idea, when in fact it was real people coming to the New World for various reasons and various opportunities. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is a very bad confusion to make. And then also one of the effects of using that expression, experiment, is it tends to give us an inflated opinion of ourselves. I don't know if Father Hugh would want to add anything there.
No, I think you're on the right track, that basically these were subjects of the British Crown who were going to find a new and better and more expansive life economically and socially in a new place. That was it.
Right.
But their categories of existence were not revolutionary. They were not viewing themselves as some kind of experiment in democracy or whatever. They just came over to do what they did at home, but to do it more freely and more expansively.
It would be very – I'm sorry. It would be an interesting side to find out where that expression American experiment, like another pernicious expression American dream.
It probably came from the University of Chicago in the 40s.
Right. Something like
most evil things.
Oh, come on now. I think it might have come from PBS. But the
PBS.
Okay. So – but it seems to me that you – if I may quibble with
NPR,
the two of you for a minute, that it seems to me you're talking about –
the Weekly Standard.
The settling of the nation is not what the mythic – is not the myth that there was a real settling of the nation, and it was not the myth that we get. But the fact is – by the time of the 1780s, with the writing of the American Constitution and all of the state constitutions that had been written in the decades prior to that, or as colonial constitutions and state constitutions, especially maybe the Constitution of the state of Virginia and Massachusetts, these were experiments.
Commonwealth of Virginia.
Excuse me. Yeah. And the Commonwealth of Massachusetts as well. But okay, so these were experiments.
I think experiment is the wrong word. They were certainly endeavors in some kind of political theory that finds its origins, to be sure, in the Enlightenment, but also in the patrimony of Christendom, which begins with Jewish revelation, Greek thought, and Roman political order, and is baptized, if you will, or sanctified during the Middle Ages. And that really is what Columbus brings to the New World in 1492 and what the founders brought to North America in the 17th century, though
With the notable fact that between 1492 and 1776, Christianity had been sundered.
Right. Yes. And but I'd also say that you need to – Columbus is one thing, but let's say the English also added to that – the impression and practice of common law, which goes back to the tribal Saxon,
yes,
barbarian,
yeah,
world.
No,
and that's what Columbus didn't bring. That Columbus brought the Spaniards were basically as Roman law and very little of the Germanic, although temperamentally, yes, Visigoths and all that. But the English still had a kind of a legal system which was not exactly Roman, and which was based upon the implied contracts between, you know, all these different people. So it's kind of interesting.
Sure.
I feel like it made
our system a little bit sloppy.
Here's where I'll give you some ground, Si.
Oh, you're going to give me a lot of ground because I'm going to come back with you.
We've got to get back to the faith sometime.
Experiment in so much as there was an influence by Enlightenment political theory.
Okay, so we do have to talk about the Enlightenment. I want to talk about the Enlightenment because this is a mixed bag from the Catholic perspective. When you think of the I know that you probably neither of you like the idea of me saying the American Revolution. You'd probably prefer a war for independence and that kind of thing.
It was a war of secession.
Okay, but the fact is,
thank you,
there is a revolution that happens that by, say, 1850 has spawned, no, maybe, I don't know, 60 or 70 revolutions around the world. There's this idea of the Novus Ordo Seculorum. There's a new thing in the world. So they did see themselves as trying a new thing.
Some did. I think these are competing views of our war for independence.
Yeah, I think
it's not correct to call it a revolution.
Right. There were real continental Masonic rationalist Enlightenment figures like Benjamin Franklin. But then there were Virginia planters who just wanted to continue over here.
Like George Washington.
Right, exactly.
And then there's Thomas Jefferson kind of caught in between.
Right, exactly. There you have it exactly.
But you missed the great man, John Adams. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
In any case, yes, we don't go that far north. Sorry.
Yeah.
But let's just say that there were varying perspectives on what this was all about, and that's characterized our country ever since. Even now,
yes, that's right. Competing narratives.
Even now, the divisions are basically traceable back to this.
Right, and who's controlling the narrative?
Yeah. Right, fair enough. Although I have to say, I remain, and I say this with great respect for both of you, unconvinced about the clarity with which you say there was no revolution. It seems to me it's obvious that there was a revolution in governance.
Well, a revolution is an overturn. No, I don't think so, because as Father Hugh said earlier, they were bringing that English common law tradition to the new shore. So it wasn't – it was a secession from the British crown, but a revolution overthrows the power in the case of the revolution in France.
The French Revolution was a real revolution.
That is a revolution. It's overthrowing king and church, or crown and
church. And totally destroying society.
Yeah, yeah.
To the degree that they were able, that's exactly what they did in America.
No, they wanted to maintain this established order, but without the overlay of the nobility.
Of the monarchy.
That's true, right.
Yeah.
And the agricultural, estate-based, household-based culture they wanted to maintain.
The respect of personal property, the respect of your home as your castle, very much part of that English tradition. That's all there.
And marriage is binding.
I see. So you don't want to say revolution because you want to stress the continuity from English common law, from medieval liberties. I think something that gets very little attention that should get more attention is the medieval town, the development of the medieval town as a democratic institution where we pretend like the medieval people knew nothing about democracy. They invented it. Yeah. Okay, I see the continuity. Okay, fair enough.
I recommend Albion Seed by David Hackett Fisher. It's the one book to read on this question.
Albion's Seed.
Albion.
Albion is a nice
England.
There's a nice literary word for England, yeah. And seed is the children of England.
Often,
so which is more? Which just so I have to take a break, but Father,
perfidious.
Father, I'd like to ask you, as the son of an Anglican, which is by English people?
Excuse me.
By English people,
is that an epithet? Is that like?
It was not an epithet. It was a fact.
You son of an Anglican.
You all need to stop being so competitive. Which is the higher kind of? Which is the more evocative? More noble kind of name or nickname for England, Albion or Blighty? Which is the – we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers right after this.
It depends if you're a soldier or not.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Sharing the gospel with family and friends can be challenging. It's especially hard when they won't even hear you out because of all the mental roadblocks they've built up. This is Carlo Broussard, and in my new book, Prepare the Way, my aim is to help you tackle that essential first step to apologetics and evangelization, getting people to listen with an open mind. Even our best witness can bounce right off folks like these if we don't prepare the way first, breaking down barriers and leaving minds and souls free to encounter the truth. I'll give you evidence and arguments and step-by-step strategies based on asking the right questions to help them overcome their obstacles and make a straight path for the Lord. Order your copy of Prepare the Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Pope Francis said, "All of us are called to mature in our work as evangelizers. We want to have better training, a deepening love, and a clear witness to the gospel. St. Paul Street Evangelization's online school of evangelization will equip you with the tools you need to be an effective evangelist. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you're unable to give, we'll set you up for free. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Father Robert Spitzer.
First of all, you will get a much deeper awareness of your faith, much deeper awareness of the evidence for your faith, explanations of tough theological issues, how science and reason and faith come together, and above all, a deeper awareness of how to practice your faith and how to live it.
Father Spitzer's Universe with Father Robert Spitzer. Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
We're not taking live calls. However, we invite you to stay with us and enjoy the broadcast. This is Catholic Answers Live.
The American Experiment, the American Revolution, the 4th of July, all terms I am not allowed to use on this broadcast, apparently, but we are discussing America, of course, on this Independence Day. We're so happy to have you with us. I am Cy Kellett, your host, joined by Father Hugh Barber, our chaplain, and by Chris Check, our president, who would prefer to be our king, but in America, we can't have that. So we are a bit contentious about some of the words, and with reason. I'm not just saying unreasonable. Or we contend with some of the narrative, the myth of America as Catholics, maybe in particular, because the story of the Catholic Church and America is a very the reality belies a great deal of the myth of America. Let's put it that way. Mm. And so you only have to go to Catholic school in Oregon to know that. Do you know what I'm referring? The Oregon,
of course, right. Of course, yeah.
Oregon tried to abolish Catholic schools.
Well, let's just say the 13 colonies didn't allow them either.
Yeah, there wasn't exactly a
– I mean, it was not.
However,
like,
we are confronted with two goods. I mean, the great good of God's church. But America is a good as well. And if I get an argument on this on Independence Day then we probably have to go find two new guests. But okay, so the good of America, though, is not a pure unmixed good. It's rooted in the Enlightenment. I want you to tell me, what is the Enlightenment and how should I think of it as a Catholic?
Father Hugh.
Well, let's just say, frankly, I don't think that our revolution, if you want to use that term, is absolutely motivated by what we call the Enlightenment.
No, I would say informed. So
informed, right. It's not entirely motivated or informed by the Enlightenment. That was going on at the time, but there were many people involved in our independence from England that didn't have even a trace of Enlightenment ideas. And if you look around the country nowadays, you can see that there's still a very large reserve of the population that still believes in the God of the Old and the New Testament and have no Enlightenment notions whatsoever, except that they have accepted the kind of the religion of America as the great blessing for the world. So I would say, but the Enlightenment is a philosophical movement, fundamentally a philosophical and social movement, which
begins in England and Scotland.
Right, it kind of begins in England and Scotland, but it also begins in Bavaria and other parts of Europe. I mean, it's a movement that has a certain expansion.
You could say it begins with the Protestant Rebellion.
I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
If you want to say that, that's fine. But
an emphasis on individualism that's part of Enlightenment theory.
Right. But I would say that there are so many Catholics involved in the Enlightenment, especially in Central Europe,
sure,
that it's hard to ascribe it to Protestantism. I'd just say.
Fair enough.
I think there are certain philosophical principles, basically the primacy of reason, and reason understood as scientific certitude or absolute certitude, instead of reason as looking in wonder at the world and examining things as they occur to us in our experience and so on. So, I mean, there's a different view towards regarding the value of human knowledge and what it actually leads to, and that the relation of all that to revelation. But anyway.
Chris, before I go to you, I want to ask Father to clarify one thing. Are you saying that the Enlightenment, at least especially with that comment about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob there, are you saying that God is displaced as the authority by reason? Is that what happened in the Enlightenment, that reason takes the place of God?
What happens is that it's a very simple thing. The cosmology of traditional science was debunked. So the order of the universe, you know, with Copernicus and Galileo and all that, the order of the universe, which was taken for granted, was now understood as no longer a valid account of how things actually are. And so then that led to a critique of the whole philosophical tradition, because it was all based on a building up of a metaphysic regarding God and the existence of God and the angels, based upon a physics that was based upon the governing of the universe. So that was a crisis of thought. So they took refuge into saying, well, maybe we can approach this question, if I would say, in a broad sense, not a more Platonic idea, just that we can find certainty and truth by the function of reason alone without reference to the senses or the external universe.
Fair
That's
enough.
the Cartesian approach.
Okay.
And so then you have the sort of the primacy of human reason as the standard, you might say, for moving forward, since we no longer have this cosmology anymore or an ordered universe that was familiar and accessible. So
that's why you say that the American founding is not entirely an artifact of the Enlightenment, because there are many, many people who do not have that kind of overreaction of the Enlightenment.
No,
they
not
still
at all.
Love God and want to be close to God. And,
and these are the people that elected our president. I mean, the current one.
Oh, I got
a lot
you.
Of them.
Okay.
I mean, they're not in the
He's
least
not an
bit
Enlightenment
interested.
Figure?
No,
that's
not
okay,
at all.
I just wanted to be clear.
I'm
on that.
Saying, let's just say this debate continues. You know,
I
but,
see.
But
okay,
the Enlightenment. But those people are then manipulated by, or they accept easily certain functions of the Enlightenment without being critical about it, without understanding what they're being, you know, led
there.
Into.
Yeah. Chris, I'm.
Well,
you
I
wait.
Just wanted to ask Father if it's too much of a simplification to say that the Enlightenment marks or even ushers in a shift in man's consideration of himself, right? So a medieval man thinks of himself in terms of his relationship to God. Again, a simplification, sure, but in the main. And society reflects that understanding, so a society that's built around marriage and the family. The Enlightenment gives us an age, or it marks the beginning of an age, or ushers in an age where the fundamental unit of society is the individual human person.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And of course, when we get to talking about Americanism, then we see some of the pernicious effects of that way of thinking.
Okay.
Creeping into. Into America. I think this is maybe a simplification, but I think it's true. Father, is it fair to have I described it fairly?
Well, fairly enough. I mean, the medieval man viewed himself as part of a complete cosmos.
Sure.
With God at the top and the angels, and everything was arranged. Even the human body was related to the heavenly bodies, you know, and its functioning and all of that. So there was a particular perspective, but I think that.
But all this talk about rights of man comes out of this age, and so then you have the absurd of it. Rousseau saying, "Well, if I desire something, I have a right to it."
Yeah. Well, I think that the point you made, which I think is really important, is the question of the family and the household.
Sure.
Because if you want to know the difference between the so-called American Revolution and the French Revolution, all you need to do is examine the two. Principal decrees of the French Revolution from the beginning was the immediate establishment of the suppression of religious vows, like that went away forever, and then no fault divorce.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, in our English tradition, and I have to say it's not PC to say that, but in our English tradition. What we really actually have, we're still fighting the marriage question. It's still active. It's
right.
still real. Like what constitutes marriage?
Yeah.
The French already
1897
got rid of it.
Or 19, you know,
they got rid of it in the 18th century.
Yeah.
Now, granted, subsequently they had various different regimes afterwards, and
right.
certain Catholicizations that occurred later on with the
right.
the different the second and. And empire and all that kind of thing. But the fact is our revolution had nothing to do with anybody's desire to undermine marriage and completely reestablish a society based upon individual ciphers. But there were people in our revolution like Benjamin Franklin who loved those ideas and were willing to temporize with them.
Yeah,
but that was not.
I recommend Banal's book on divorce. But they had ceremonies, you know, in revolutionary France. They had ceremonies celebrating divorce.
Right. Yeah.
So are you saying that you can look at the French Revolution as a kind of madness in the way that we don't look at the American
No, the American Revolution was a responsible reaction to certain issues.
Taxes.
And taxes and all that kind of thing. And it was variously motivated, but it was not motivated by a desire to create a completely new society. That's the commies. That's the French Revolution. That's
Spain.
That's Nazis. That's they want to have a completely new society.
Mexico.
Yeah, year zero kind of thinking.
Right, right.
But let's so is it one of the strengths of America then that we're basically at heart homey English people? That
agrarian.
I think that is our biggest strength, but it's one that's not much emphasized.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I see. It's not emphasized, right? We pretend like the great strength is this document, the Constitution or the Bill of Rights, and these are not bad things. But the real strength is the habits of culture that we got from the English.
Well, you can always tell the difference between those who emphasize the Constitution and those who emphasize the
Declaration.
And when you notice that they only talk about Declaration of Independence, then you go, oh, this is the revolutionary mentality.
I see.
And the Constitution is the idea of continuity.
Yeah, the Declaration is not a founding document. It's a political tract to get the French in on the war.
Yeah.
Why does he do that right when we're going to a break? Actually, that's a really good tease to come back. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more consideration of America and the Catholic Church on this Independence Day on Catholic Answers Live.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
In what forms does the Word of God come to us? How do we know that the Bible is inspired, inerrant, and complete? Why do we need tradition to help us understand Scripture? Doesn't the Bible teach that it alone is sufficient for salvation? In 20 Answers, Scripture and Tradition, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more, examining the first and most important issue in the Christian faith, the manner in which God has communicated to us the saving truths of the gospel. 20 Answers, Scripture and Tradition is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
It might be said that anti-Catholic notions of the Church's history are the original fake news. With all the misinformation being spread, where does one look for the truth? In The Real Story of Catholic History, Professor Steve Weidenkopf gives you the facts on over 50 of the most common misconceptions about Catholic history and shows how to answer them simply and powerfully. Whether it's to answer claims about Catholicism's supposedly pagan origins, old myths about the Inquisition that never seem to go away, or more modern errors that anti-Catholics put forth, The Real Story of Catholic History is an essential resource for every Catholic's bookshelf. Order your copy of The Real Story of Catholic History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
I'm Tom Price.
And I'm Gloria Purvis. Tomorrow, we'll bring you all the Catholic news of the day, along with interviews with newsmakers and our godly counsel.
Please join us for Morning Glory, 7 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
A very happy and blessed and safe Independence Day to you and your family from all of us here at Catholic Answers. Hope you're because I said Independence Day
No.
I didn't say 4th of July?
No, Independence Day is great.
It's hard for me to talk with it when you guys are here.
I love fireworks, Si. Yeah. I love fireworks.
I do too.
Fireworks are
awesome.
Si is the best host you could possibly hope for.
It's true.
Okay.
It's really true.
That's the end of the show. It's only a half hour today.
He's sophisticated. Thank you. Insightful, patient.
Patient, kind.
Oh, my goodness. Let's keep going.
Cheerful and
this.
Reverent. Right. How does it go? Yeah.
You know that.
And he's going to be
cruising.
No, he's going to be on the Catholic Answers cruise.
What?
In February.
Wow, what a selling point.
He's
going to
be on the cruise.
There it is.
February 10th through 17th. Holy smoke, February. That's coming up.
Yep.
That's tomorrow
practically.
And I was just told this before I went away on the weekend that I got to go on the cruise. And
invited you and you said yes.
Yes. I've just been in my room weeping for joy all weekend, just silently
You're
weeping.
You're going to enjoy it a lot because there are going to be great people there.
I've never been to the Caribbean or the Caribbean. Either of those places,
all those British colonies.
So
this is a brand new ship, the new Stentendam, Holland America, brand new. It makes its maiden voyage in December of this year. So this thing will have made, I don't know, half a dozen sailings when we get on there.
Right.
Brand new. And Tim Staples, Carla Broussard, Cy Kellett, and also our chaplain is Father Hugh's successor as prior at St. Michael's Abbey.
Right. Oh.
So if you want to know what like a younger Father Hugh is, you need to if you want to know what Father Hugh was like when he was younger.
Well, he was my student. I taught him philosophy, I taught him novitiate and all that kind of stuff. So, but he's my successor.
He has a name, Father Chrysostom Baer.
Father Chrysostom Baer, right.
He's a first-rate priest. You're going to love him.
First-rate priest, eloquent, humorous, cheerful.
I'm starting to feel like Europe is good enough for you, but oh no, I can't go with you to the Caribbean. I'm sure that it's not that.
I'm sure that I'm not worthy of the Caribbean. I left that to my successor who outranks me.
All these people are giving talks. Chris Check, Tim Staples, Carla Broussard, Father Chrysostom Baer. I'm going to give a talk on – I'm going to give a reflection. I don't have any idea. Okay. I think I should get to MC the thing.
So we do these Caribbean and Alaska cruises, the domestic cruises, if you will, the focus really is on apologetics.
Right.
Yeah.
And so this is an opportunity to bone up on your capacity to defend the faith in a beautiful setting with people who love Catholic answers.
Go to Fort Lauderdale, Half Moon Bay in the Bahamas, Ocho Rios in Jamaica.
Grand Cayman, Cozumel.
And then back to Fort Lauderdale. I'm glad they're bringing us back to where we're leaving.
They are.
That's a good idea. If you book now, you get $100 off per person by entering the promo code RADIO on your online application.
I find out about this cruise?
Can go to CatholicAnswersCruise.com and find out all kinds of things about it. CatholicAnswersCruise.com, or you can call the Cruise Authority, and I will give that number out if you want to write it down. The Cruise Authority's number is 800-707-1634. $100 off
each, per person.
Per person, if you sign up now.
CatholicAnswersCruise.com.
And if the Caribbean cruise is anything like the one we just had for the Danube, you just can't miss it.
It will actually be different.
But the point is that
but the camaraderie is something wonderful.
There's a lot more water.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Right. But will we see where? So Christopher Columbus, who sailed the ocean blue in 1492, he bumped into the Caribbean cruise.
I will
right?
be talking about Christopher Columbus and Cortez.
You will? I love when he talks about Cortez. That's a fun talk.
Talk about not PC.
Yep.
But come on. Have you seen these towers of skulls they keep discovering? It's ridiculous. Thousands and tens of thousands of human skulls piled up by the Aztecs.
One of the most heroic figures in the history of the West.
Yeah. A man's man, certainly.
Absolutely.
Cortez. Let us go back then to America in its more northern and Protestant and I say Protestant because really it's a product of Protestantism. And if I could say, there's some way in which American culture is the product of the religious wounds of Europe.
Yeah.
I leave that with you, that little gem. Somebody take that ball and run with it.
No, well, I think because the religious polity that was brought over to America was the one that exists in England. And there wasn't a single colony in which Catholics enjoyed liberty of religion. There was a brief period in Maryland, but I mean, generally speaking, the norms that govern the practice of Catholic religion in England and in Ireland, and they were the same in the colonies. So, that's actually one of the reasons why we claimed we wanted independence from England, because
the Quebec Act.
We allowed the freedom of Catholic faith in Quebec. And that was not regarded as
it's very upsetting.
Those wounds were carried over. On the other hand, thanks to the Enlightenment types, the Catholic faith was liberated in various degrees in various places. I mean, the most evident place was
in the South,
Pennsylvania, and the South.
Yeah,
but on that score, you'd have to say that the classic conservative Englishmen turned to the nativists and were basically continually anti-Catholic. And it was the Enlightenment types who wanted actual liberty of confession because of their belief in the dignity of human reasoning and all that. They're the ones that were the most liable or most likely to defend the liberty of the church. So it's kind of a little bit of a switchover.
I keep going back to David Hackett Fisher, his book Paul Revere's Ride. The opening chapters there describe Puritan Massachusetts. There are no public Christmas trees. There's no public celebration of Christmas.
No Christmas. Yeah, that's popery.
In Paul Revere's Massachusetts. And this point about the Quebec Act, I want to underscore again. So these intolerables, there were three or four of them, three, I think, these intolerable acts, after the conclusion of the French and Indian War, when Quebec falls to the British actually give religious liberty to the Catholics to practice there. In an unusual twist of history, probably creating a Catholic culture, or at least allowing for the flourishing of a Catholic culture by saving Quebec, French Quebec, from the revolution, right? In France, and a great Catholic culture persisting well up into the 1960s before the Quiet Revolution. But this Quebec Act, which granted religious freedom to Catholics in Canada, that irritated the Sons of Liberty, the Massachusetts boys. Yeah. And they said, this is
too much.
Yeah, we can't have all these sacerdotal, superstitious Catholics coming here to our colonies.
So do either of you have a sense of, say I had been a Catholic in the American colonies at the time of the founding of the country, what would my status have been? How would I have been treated? Could I have found a church to go to Mass?
In Maryland.
For a while.
Yeah.
I mean, but I'd say if you were rich.
If you were Lord Baltimore.
If you were rich, you could probably manage fairly well. But your worship would have been outside of Pennsylvania, would have been relatively private. I mean, the priest would have come and set up the altar in your dining room.
Well, one of the oldest Catholic churches in the United States is in South Carolina.
Right. I mean, yeah. Right.
In the English United States. I'm not talking about Texas or California.
As you went farther south, it wasn't quite so bad. But let's just say if you're going north, it was pretty much a private thing, you know, in the very beginning, to be sure.
Yeah. Well, among the wounds, I mean, there's a certain way in which Europe had, through the wars of religion and what do we call it, Peace of Westphalia and all that, this idea of a baby idea, the first baby steps towards religious liberty were kind of born. But the
Peace of Westphalia following the 30 Years' War.
Yeah, but
horrible event.
But I would say the English didn't have to deal with that. They had their own polity and their own rules. And Peace of Westphalia it established the lack of freedom of religion.
Yeah, the prince's religion is your religion, right?
I mean,
whoever your prince is.
As a result of Protestantism, you're taught in school that they finally got religious liberty in the States. But what really happened was that Protestantism created state churches
that caused this
situation.
Yeah.
And it was not the Catholics that did this in the beginning, although obviously the Catholic Church would not have tolerated, you know,
But certainly the memory of the 30 Years' War and all that, this is still very much a thing. There seems like even the Puritans, there's this sense of a wounded desire for something very, very pure. And that their sense of purity was a very austere kind of purity.
And violent.
Okay, so here we
austere
have –
austere and violent.
So we think of America and Ronald Reagan like this term in the Puritan idea of the shining city on a hill. This is a very problematic phrase, however.
Yeah, it's Kennedy who first runs with it, if I'm not mistaken.
Was it?
Yeah.
But it is an actual term that comes from the
One of those Puritan preachers. His name will come to me.
Yeah, but from the time
John
of the founding
Owen or somebody, yeah. Like
Massachusetts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, just to underscore this point that you were making, all these colonies had state churches.
Right.
This
yes.
whole idea.
Yeah, we've forgotten that.
Yeah, this whole idea that another misunderstanding that people are given, or just frankly lie, that people are given in school is that this has always been a place of religious liberty, that the Puritans came here to practice religious liberty. No, they came here to practice religious intolerance.
Is it fair to say that the No Establishment Clause in the American Constitution is about states not competing with one another?
It's about the federal government not establishing a national religion.
But the states could have their own religion.
Of course. Yeah. They were sovereign,
right. Yeah.
Which is why it's bad to say the Civil War. We should say the war between the states.
Okay. That's another
I have
show.
To say, you're a little bit like the PC people who are always correcting your language. You know, oh, you can't say that. Do you know what I mean?
Well, just war between the states is more accurate.
He's a little bit of a language policeman. You're offended that I say that.
No, I'm not offended. not the least.
Are you offended, Chris?
No. I think somebody needs to be a language policeman.
You're free to say whatever you want.
Only until they let me go or take me off the cruise.
Error has no rights, Father.
Right? Okay, but people have rights. We got to be careful
right, exactly.
With that one. We have to be very
yes,
careful
thank you
with
very
that
much.
One.
We always are like spanning the whole of the universe here.
There is a way in which this is what I want to get to, because I believe this is a theme that Chris gets to quite a bit, and that's one that I'm very convinced by. The way that Native American or American Indian people are treated by the Jesuits who go to Quebec, or I think it's Jesuits and Franciscans across Mexico.
Dominicans.
Right.
Is very different from the way American Indian people are treated by the Protestant Americans. Am I correct in that, Chris?
I think that's a broad stroke, but in the main it's true. Yep.
Yeah, although one has to admit that there were very sincere missionaries who put together the first dictionaries of Indian languages and worked really hard to evangelize Protestant missionaries.
Fair enough.
The Indians, but in the main, certainly we had magisterial support for our insistence on the full humanity and dignity of the Indians.
Yeah, whatever you want to say about the conquistadores, they were funded by a crown whose motivation was to bring the cross to the New World. And you look at the story of those Jesuit reductions, the elevation of those people into civilized. And or the California missions, for example, into the civilized Christian West, where within a couple of generations they're singing polyphony and making violins.
Yeah, but the American thing is to push them west,
push the brown people towards the Pacific Ocean, right?
Yeah, well, here we are.
Well, and we had
all those brown folks.
We came and took it back.
We had a euphemism for it. We called it manifest destiny. And that really picks up in the middle of the 19th century.
Would your quick evaluation of manifest destiny?
This new world is the right of these people who came from Europe. It belongs to them. Because they're the ones deserving of it, because of the quality of their race and their knowledge, and the people who were here before.
Is it inherently
don't
racist
have a claim
and
to
violent
it.
Manifest destiny?
It is racist and violent.
Okay. Fair.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's, I just wanted to establish, because I have to take a break.
But they wouldn't have said it that way back then. But
no,
yes,
they,
no, but,
can,
but
it,
yeah. Right.
No, they would have made it as if they were doing a favor to this land.
Yes. I hate to say it, but it's not that – well, I won't say it. I won't say it on the air. I'll say it at the break, and then you can tell me if what I was going to say is too shocking. But – and I'll say it if we come back. But
it is not the Catholic view. It is not the Catholic experience in Canada. Not the Catholic experience in Mexico.
And after the break, into this expanding manifest destiny America comes a wave after wave of Catholic immigrants in the 19th century. We'll talk about them when we come back.
Germans and Irish.
Right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Aren't faith and reason two separate and distinct kinds of truth? Why do Christians believe in the biblical creation story when science has disproved it? How can the modern world take religion seriously when they oppose scientific advancements like birth control and stem cell research? In 20 Answers, Faith and Science, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more, clearing away misconceptions and helping you to understand and explain to your friends and family the complex but ultimately harmonious relationship between religious and scientific truth. 20 Answers Faith and Science is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
God helps those who help themselves. Preach the gospel always. When necessary, use words. We all hear sayings like these, and we assume they come from the Bible, the saints, or famous Christian writers. Nobody can seem to place their origin, but by sheer repetition, they've acquired a halo of truth. In my new book, What the Saints Never Said, I look at over 40 of these well-known sayings and track them back to their original sources. You'll be surprised at what I found. Some are close to what was really said. Many were misattributed or twisted beyond their original meaning, and more than a few of these sayings were simply made up. I hope by setting the record straight, I can make you aware of the theological errors that can lead us away from the faith and offer you authentic quotes from Scripture, saints, and scholars that will draw you closer to our faith. Get your copy of What the Saints Never Said by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I come from the other side of the tracks, see? My uncle used to have slot machines. Put one nickel in and it's emptied. And I brought him home in a bag, and my mother looked at me. Where did you get all that money? I said, I won them. You didn't win them. He fixed the machine. I didn't care if he fixed the machine or not, you know?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic. We're not taking live calls. However, we invite you to stay with us and enjoy the broadcast. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. A very happy, blessed Independence Day to you. And a day to remember so many people who gave so much to build up this country and also to enjoy the blessings that they bequeathed to us by their hard work and industry and love of family and love of neighbor and all that. It's a wonderful patrimony we have if we can keep it, I suppose, is a way to say it.
Yeah, as Franklin said.
But today is a day to enjoy those blessings more than anything. We're talking here at Catholic Answers today about the Catholic Church and the American Experiment. I was somewhat scolded on the idea of the American Experiment, and fair enough, I take your points. So we'll just say the Catholic Church in America. Our guests this hour are Chris Check, our president here at Catholic Answers, and Father Hugh Barber, our chaplain and Norbertine priest and a formator of many fine priests, including Chrysostom Baer.
Chaplain on the next cruise.
Chaplain on the next cruise,
next, which is coming up soon. So February. Sign up now.
CatholicAnswersCruise.com.
February.
Okay, so here's this country that we have established. It has a certain. It is definitely marked by the religious wounds of Europe that preceded its founding. It's definitely not amenable to Catholics. It's very aggressive. I don't know if aggressive is the word, but assertive at least. Maybe aggressive is the word in pushing Indians west and not
Relocating them to Florida.
Right. So into all this starts to come just a flood of Catholics. So why?
Thanks be to God.
And how? And what is the import of that?
I think the whole microbrew thing that's going on right now, we can thank the German and the Irish for.
I know, right? So at least we have good beer in America because of these Catholics.
That's right, because the English, their beer is...
Careful, Father's going to start defending English beer.
I don't have any opinion on this.
So how did these Bavarians and Poles and Hungarians and Irish and all that get to be here?
Different reasons. One, they're recruited. Germans and Irish are recruited during the Mexican War, the war with Mexico. So what's that? 1830s thereabouts, or a little bit later, and they fill the ranks of Winfield Scott's army. That's one. Germans and Irish, in particular. The potato famine is blamed for migration. Also, potato famine exacerbated by the effects of which are exacerbated by the British Crown. Father Hugh is welcome to contradict me.
One thing I think that we should establish.
But the promise of
every country has evils in its past. We're not hating a country just to point out. I mean, we certainly don't hate our country.
No, I think it's really important to underscore that. And one of the things really much to celebrate, particularly we're talking about earlier now, I'm sorry to go back, Si, But we were talking earlier about some of these notions that informed the American founding. And one of them was this authentic idea of federalism, which meant that the states were sovereign, right? It's kind of a word that confuses people nowadays because it tends to make them think of the federal government or the central government. On the contrary, federalism comes from fetus or league, right, of independent states, but that kept their independence and drew the – and their sovereignty and drew that – from the first sovereign unit, which is the family. So power in federalism begins in the family, or authority is a better word, begins in the family and comes out to the state, not from the state down. And this is this notion very much informed Jefferson's political thought. It's something very much to celebrate in American political theory and American history, and it runs very parallel to the Christian notion of subsidiarity, or the Catholic notion of subsidiarity, which finds its expression in those social justice encyclicals, Leo XIII and Pius and John Paul and Benedict. So I just wanted to get that there because we were I didn't want anybody to think you know, I was in the Marine Corps. I'm proud to be an American, and we celebrate this country very much. But I think it's good to know what, you know, what's true and what's not. But that notion of federalism, that decentralized notion, is a very Christian Catholic idea, and there's a lot of parallelism between Jefferson's political thought and that of the popes of the 19th and 20th century.
And this is, again, why you wanted – both of you wanted to de-emphasize the idea of the American Revolution because of the continuity that this – not just the thoughts, Chris, but the cultural habits of medieval people.
Very important.
It's a war of independence is what we like to say.
Okay. Yeah. So, but
or these, secession.
These habits are at the root of the goodness of the American thing.
Right.
And they are rooted in, as you say, household, father, and you say family, Chris. Right, yeah. But that's where it all – and that's exactly what's kind of falling apart right now.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Oh, and extended family. Right. Extended family, very much a part of that notion of subsidiarity and federalism.
But I think in terms of patriotism, we need to always remind ourselves that whenever this is a problem we have, we are not patriotic Americans because we have the best ideas in the world. We're patriotic Americans because this country
gave us our birth.
Took care of us.
Yeah. Right. Right. This is
that's the reason.
Yeah. Right. You don't love your mother because she's so bright.
My family is the greatest family in the world. No yeah. family is as good as my family. You say, no, your family is the greatest for you because it's your family.
Yeah.
And you have a moral obligation to love your family above all others. Your country is the same way. It's the patria. It's it's a larger household. Yeah. And it's taken care of you. And even if it were – even if you had a government that was taken over by monsters, they're still paving your roads. They're still – making life possible
right.
for you.
We need
so
to
you have to be grateful.
We need to be patriots, not nationalists.
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah.
Okay, you got now I wanted to talk about the influx of the immigrants of the 19th century. I'm going to hold that to the second hour because I want to finish with that idea because
there's another hour?
Yeah.
Praise God.
We didn't tell you, Father, because we thought you might not come. Yeah, we're going to continue with this conversation. We're going to get right up to the present day through the history of Catholics
well, then
in America.
I'll calm down. Yeah.
But the nations are so you say it's good to be a patriot, not a nationalist, but a nation is a good thing. I mean that there's nothing wrong with a nation. So well, why is it better? Why do we say we be patriots and not nationalists? What's the implication of the word nationalism that you reject?
Well, nation's a fine word, but nationalist has a particular
almost has a religious sense
right.
to it. I think Father Hugh was explaining it well when he says, "Yes, I love my family because it's mine, not because I have the illusion that it's the best
better
family
than
ever."
Family.
Right.
And that is a problem that afflicts a lot of
my
America.
Family. We could have been the Obamas; that would have been much better. But you know,
I know that they're.
But that is a problem. Side.
They don't seem unruly, though. I think one of the nice part of fun is an unruly family. Maybe the Obamas are, but that never got advertised. If they're unruly,
hey, he and Michelle are still married.
God bless them.
It's been institutionalized, the unruliness. Yeah,
yeah. But a lot of Americans labor under that illusion that America is singular. That it's exceptional.
But
in
let
fact,
me throw at you.
You hear this. I have a friend in Texas who talks this way. Talks about American exceptionalism.
Yeah.
That's very dangerous.
Except that we have to have that in America, and you don't have to have it other places because we are not a people. We are not.
Wrong.
Go ahead. Give it to me. Okay. Tell me why.
Well, it goes back to the conversation we were having at the beginning of the hour. This place was settled by four distinct ethnic groups from Great Britain.
Yes.
And insofar as we're united in a common culture, a common history, common songs, common religion. We are a people. We're not a stir fry. Let's get that idea out of our heads.
I cannot get it out of my head. I'm going to need you to disabuse me of it, as you've disabused me of so many of my American.
Well, there's one way people are truly united, Si, yeah. And that's in the Catholic Church.
Faith, right?
Yep.
That's what pulls it all together.
Yep.
Well, okay. So I feel
the priests really are conspiring.
No,
conspiring
to make you happy and whole. Today we discuss America and the Catholic Church on Catholic Answers Live. Chris Check, our president, is here. Father Hugh Barber is here, our chaplain. And we will continue that discussion, unruly as it is, when we come back right after this on Catholic Answers Live.